Good evening. My name is Emery Debay. I live in Bucksport, Maine. I'm affiliated with the United Steelworkers, 1188 of Bucksport, Maine. I guess while I was getting ready to testify and looking back on the impact of trade on the people I know and work with, I couldn't help but think of the devastation it has caused within my own family and friends. When people talk about jobs being lost, I only have to think of my brother-in-law, who worked at a sawmill in Costigan and watched it shut down because of bad trade deals. I can think of friends I grew up with in Ashland who no longer have a mill to go to because of trade deals. I have four cousins who worked at mills in Millinocket and East Millinocket. Two of them have been laid off. One got to retire, and one's still hanging on. I, along with my co-workers, go to work at the Bucksport Mill every day wondering when we're going to get our big announcement. We read about job loss every day because of trade deals. Because this hangs over our head, we take cuts in job and monetaries to try to remain competitive. The only problem is we're not playing on the same field as some of these other countries. We couldn't possibly get competitive when we compete against countries that use slave labor, child labor, or kill people trying to organize workers. You go to work every day in this type of atmosphere and try to be upbeat. It's not that easy. That is why when word started leaking out about this bill that would include labor standards and all trade bills, there could be heard buzz going through our communities that maybe we'd have a chance to make things a little better for ourselves. Could have hoped that maybe we wouldn't lose our jobs to an unfair trade deal. That's why I'm here asking you to support the Trade Act bill put forth by Representative Mike Mishu. This bill has core labor standards. All countries have core labor standards that all countries should adhere to, whether they have trade deals or not. These standards are the right way for all working people to be treated. I'd like to present you with a copy of the Trade Act and ask you to endorse this urgent change in trade policy that we all need. The core labor policies are basically the right to organize, the abolishment of child labor, the end of all slave labor, and the end of discrimination. And the beauty of this is that the bill calls that all countries we trade with have to make these part of their domestic laws. It's not just in the agreement, but it would be the laws of their land. And it also sets up a commission that would oversee and have oversight in this stuff. And that's what we need, somebody to take care of it. We have trade bills out there now that have laws written into them that are unenforceable, that aren't working. So I ask you to look at this and please support it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. DeBay. Appreciate you.
Steve Husson works for Food and Medicine in Bangor. He previously worked for the shipping company DHL before its recent closure in Bangor.
I now work for Food and Medicine, and I find that's a privilege. We're a grassroots organization. We try to stay in contact as much as we can with laid-off workers. And Food and Medicine has turned me loose to study what's happened to laid-off workers. Of the workers I've studied, 92 directly apply to what's going on here tonight.
Husson says his study shows there has been an average wage loss of $6 an hour for workers who previously worked at Eastern Fine Paper, Old Town, Passadumkeag, and Domtar. He is still yet to study Millinocket and Ashland.
And the study is still ongoing. We're going to include Millinocket and the folks up in Ashland. But all these people had good jobs at the mills, and all were union. These workers were out for an average of 38 weeks before they could find another job. And they've gone through 2.15 jobs since then. They were all getting overtime at the mills. 63% said now they get no overtime, another drop. Only 25% of them have been able to maintain membership in a union. In health insurance, all these workers were covered when they were at the mills with health insurance. There is varying degrees of what their contracts said. For example, Old Town workers had 75% of their coverage paid by the company. Now 21% of these folks have no life, no health insurance at all. And 79% who have health insurance now report that they have to get the coverage through their spouse, and some of them have to pay premiums up to $600 a month. This is a direct act of what has come through the Foreign Trade Act. Every one of these were the Free Trade Acts. They were all eligible for the foreign trade assistance. And I do wish to put a little bit of a human face on here. I just grabbed quickly some of the quotes that they gave me, some of the comments, because these are real people. A 49-year-old man told me, I refinanced my house. We owed just 8 more years. Now it's back to 30. Another fella told me, it's very tight, but my parents lent me money. Another fella cut firework just to make his payments. Another person told me, I used up my savings. I'm poor, very depressed. I've thought about suicide twice. Another told me, yes, I've used up everything. Only 2 years left on my mortgage, and I'm afraid I'll lose the house. I'm buried in medical bills, and there's no way I can ever catch up. A brewer worker told me, my wife works at the Walmart days, and I work at Walmart's night. That way we can look after our son. We can't afford daycare. Another fellow said, I've got a bad leg from 4 falls that I've taken. I refuse to stay at the hospital. Another fellow had to charge his medical bills to his credit cards. Another fellow built up an $8,500 bill to the hospitals when his son had a motorcycle accident. These are real people. In conclusion, you know, the numbers and the stories of these laid off workers just demonstrates how the impact of the free trade acts have been on these people. And there are times I got very depressed while surveying them. And this survey does not include the impact on our local communities, the disappearance of money coming in to our towns, less disposable income to be spent at local businesses, car dealerships, mom-and-pop stores, less revenues for our schools, churches, police and fire departments. There's more money being spent on unemployment and retraining. Free trade acts have been short-sighted and economically unsustainable. The folks at FAM, who I represent, Food and Medicine, would like to urge the Commission to support the Fair Trade Act as a way to start moving forward. I urge everyone here to stay involved, educate their friends and relatives, and we need to pull together to change these acts to turn around our communities. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hassan.
Bonnie Preston is a member of the local chapter of the Alliance for Democracy, which is a member of the Maine Fair Trade Campaign and is also working on issues of bottling and privatization of water in the state. She and a number of speakers spoke to the commission about the potential impacts of the Atlantica Economic Zone, which includes the northeast states of the U.S. and the eastern provinces of Canada, structured under the Security and Prosperity Partnership. She urged the Commission and Representative Michou to consider this in the Trade Act and future work on trade.
I attended your meeting last summer at which Brian Crowley, representing the Halifax-based Atlantic Institute for Market Studies, spoke about Atlantica, a project being driven forward by Ames, the Atlantic Institute. One of the many things that he didn't mention in his presentation is that Atlantica is a part of the Security and Prosperity Partnership, the SPP, although planning for Atlantica predates the SPP. The Security and Prosperity Partnership was finalized in Texas in 2005 when President Bush, President Fox, and Prime Minister Martin shook hands on the deal, bypassing Congress, which was showing increasing resistance to NAFTA. The SPP is a comprehensive plan to integrate the U.S., Canada, and Mexico to enhance security and global competitiveness. The security part of the deal relates to enhanced border security, ensuring that economic migrants are increasingly stopped at the borders, while money, of course, gets through. One piece of the prosperity part is what Crowley described at the meeting in June. Giant cargo ships bringing goods from low-wage countries into ports in the U.S., Canada, and Mexico, and dispersing the goods from these ships throughout the countries via superhighways. The other piece is accelerated extraction of raw materials. The SPP has the same goals of the free trade agreements. Promote the interests of international corporations by removing all barriers to trade, even laws and regulations intended to protect people, communities, and the environment, while ensuring that capital flows without any constraints, even those intended to protect national economies from capital flight. The SPP goes further by promoting the physical and security infrastructure to accelerate trade by transnational corporations. It is implemented through working groups consisting of government officials from the three countries and leaders of the multinational corporations. There are three security groups and 10 prosperity groups covering major economic sectors from energy and financial services to transportation and health. The aim of these groups is to fully integrate the economies of the three countries to ensure a free flow of goods. In practice, it creates a parallel governing structure consisting of corporate and financial elites working directly with government officials and bypassing the people's representatives in Congress.
Again and again, speakers emphasized with examples the inherent destruction of a global economic model which gives corporations the power to make decisions. Farm worker Liam Brunel.
First of all, they have no accountability or responsibility. There's no way to hold them accountable because their headquarters is located in some faraway place. So if they poison one of your family members, or let's say you lived in Bhopal, India, and they poison 500,000 people in your town, the headquarters is nowhere nearby. There's nothing you can do about it. I think we should put more money and more investment into small businesses because they're going to take care of us. Transnational corporations have only one concern, and that's making money. As a matter of fact, if a CEO makes decisions that don't maximize profits for that company, they get fired. I guess you guys probably already know all that. But that's not a good way to make decisions. You need to take things into account, like, are we hurting anyone? Are we leaving anything for future generations? Transnational corporations want to make as much money as fast as possible. If they get access to the Northwoods, they'll cut it all down and go somewhere else where there's trees left, you know, and they'll come back here in 100 years when the trees have grown back and do it again. They won't manage it for generations to survive off it. They have no long-term vision except for this vision of eternal growth. We'll always be able to keep growing. Well, we know that we're going to run out of Earth after a while. This model uses up all our resources really fast, and then what are our kids going to do? I don't know. But that's why our economy is in such a tight spot right now, is because we've continuously given over our decision-making power to these massive corporations who don't care about us in the long term. It's like having gambling sociopaths run the country, and I don't think it's appropriate. I think people with more common sense should be in charge of things. So in conclusion, I think less emphasis on the big wealthy players and more emphasis on small businesses, small farms. You know, if there's money to throw around, we should be spending it on developing small businesses because that develops a sense of community. Neighborliness, people take care of each other, people make decisions that are for the benefit of everyone, not just in this generation, but for generations to come.
Dennis Chinoy from Peace Through Inter-American Community Action and the U.S. El Salvador Sister Cities was among others who spoke from their experiences visiting El Salvador through the Bangor area's unique connection. He emphasized how U.S.-initiated free trade models impact the immigration of Salvadorans to this country.
We are accustomed to thinking about how free trade deals have adversely affected Mainers, whose jobs are exported to the South, but we're less accustomed to appreciating that immigration and trade policy are also two sides of the same coin. Most undocumented Latin American immigrants are in the U.S. communities, neither because they are drawn to do the jobs that Americans don't want to do, as we hear, nor because they want to take advantage of social services that American taxpayers subsidize. They're here because life in their own communities is untenable. And part of the reason that their lives are unsustainable has to do with the trade policies and agreements that our own country has with their countries of origin. Those of us in Maine with sister city connections to rural communities in El Salvador have seen firsthand how small rural farmers can no longer afford to grow their own food, how employment and opportunities in their countries often feature don't provide living wages, how the most basic services in their country, like health care, medicines, electricity, telecommunications, are in private and now often foreign hands, which has made their cost unaffordable. So for the communities south of our border, provisions of NAFTA and CAFTA that promote and enforce these conditions of life with their subsidies and market penetration and privatizations and intellectual property rights are not abstract trade policy issues, but are economic weapons that leave them poor, hungry, ill, and sometimes dead. NAFTA and CAFTA export jobs from our country and exports poor Latinos from theirs to us. That is why Latin American immigration is in great part fundamentally also a trade issue. So I wanted to point out that the Trade Reform, Accountability, Development, and Employment Act of 2008, sponsored by Representative Michaud and Senator Brown, is a welcome and powerful antidote to trade bills that have shredded safety nets in countries north and south. And it also has the kind of provisions that merit renaming it the Root Cause Immigration Reform Act of 2008, because just as it protects U.S. workers, consumers, and communities from the most pernicious features of free trade agreements, it also promotes the very conditions in Latin America that will improve living conditions in those countries as well.